Outside San Angelo, Texas, 1904. 2 days later, with their horses in the attached stock car, Jesse and Billy were on a train bound for San Angelo. Both were wearing suits, though Jesse had to buy a suit for Billy since he didn't have one.
Remember, if anyone asks, we are cattle buyers, and we are going to San Angelo to look at stock.
Yes, sir.
They were due to arrive in San Angelo at 11 o'clock the next day. At about 11 o'clock that night, the train came to a sudden and unscheduled stop.
Hey, what do you think this is?
I don't have any idea. It's too dark to see anything outside.
Hey, Pa, wouldn't it be funny if someone was holding up this train?
Shh! Wait, I didn't mean anything. I was just making a joke is all.
Jokes like that can be dangerous, Billy. From now on, you have to think about everything you say. Do you understand that? You have to be on guard at all times.
Yes, sir, I understand. Be more careful from now on, I promise.
See that you are.
Folks, I'm sorry about the sudden stop, but there were some cows crossing the track, and the engineer had to stop to keep from hitting them. Soon as the last one is gone, we'll get underway.
Here's another lesson for you. Anytime you have an opportunity to get some sleep, you'd better take it.
Yes, sir.
When they reached San Angelo the next day, Jesse bought a newspaper and took it with him as they had dinner at one of the local saloons. He began reading it during the meal.
Yeah, it's a funny way of reading the paper. You haven't even looked at the front page.
That's because I'm not interested in the front page. This is what I'm interested in. Business news. First Trust Bank of San Angelo will be transferring sufficient funds to the San Francisco Bank and Savings to cover checks drawn against it when Emerson Williams arranged for the shipping of his beef to Japan. The money transfer will go out on Friday next so that it will be there for deposit on Monday morning. The amount, to be handled by Texas Pacific Express, is said to be in excess of $5,000. You asked how much money? How does this sound to you?
How did you know to look for this in the paper?
I've seen such announcements before.
When are we going?
Tomorrow is Thursday. I want to be there in plenty of time. For now, after we eat, I want to go over to the depot and time the trains for a while.
Pa, before we go, could we maybe have a couple of beers?
Yeah, but don't get drunk. When people get drunk, they start talking. And sometimes when they start talking, they say things they shouldn't. We have to be very careful.
Waiter, bring me a beer.
Honey, if you buy me a drink, I'll sit and talk with you for a while.
And a drink for the lady.
My name is Rose. What's yours?
Billings. Seth Billings.
Well, Seth, you are a handsome man in that suit. You aren't dressed like most of the cowboys who come in here.
That's because I'm not a cowboy. I'm a cattle buyer. My pa and I are here to look at cattle.
What's there to look at? They all look the same to me.
Billy's ear caught a conversation next to him at the bar.
Tomorrow. They're going to hang both of them tomorrow.
Both of them have been in here several times. They both seem to be good old boys.
Yeah, but when they robbed the stage, they killed Emmett Drew. Emmett had himself a wife and two kids.
I'm not saying that Lou and Harry don't deserve to get hung. I'm just saying I hate that it come to this.
You going to watch?
I reckon I probably will watch.
There's gonna be a hanging here tomorrow.
Yes.
Do you know the two they're talking about?
Like the man said, they used to come in here. Yes, I know both of them. I never thought they'd do anything like holding up a stage and killing Mr. Drew, though. Let's not talk about them anymore. Let's talk about you. Where are you from?
Colorado. Denver, Colorado.
I've heard there are mountains in Colorado. It must be very pretty there.
Oh, it is.
The next morning, there were at least 300 people gathered at the corner of North Main and Pulliam Streets. The scaffold stood at the junction of the two streets, with two nooses dangling from the crossbeam. A few minutes earlier, filled sandbags had been placed on the two trapdoors and a handle pulled to test the operation. Billy had jumped at the sound.
Pa, why are we here? I don't think I'm going to like watching a couple of men get their necks stretched.
It's part of your education.
But what kind of lesson is this?
Let's just say it will make you aware of what could happen if you aren't careful. You need to always walk the straight and narrow, son.
When are you going to do it? We're getting tired. Here they come!
Looking back toward the jail, Jesse could see the two condemned men being led to the gallows. Their legs weren't hobbled, but their hands were handcuffed behind their backs.
Go on up there now, Lou. You don't want to keep these folks standing out in the hot sun any longer than they already have to, do you?
Yeah, Sheriff, I'm just all broke out with pity for them.
Come on, boys. The longer you wait, the more time you have to worry about it. If it was me, I'd be wanting to just get it over with.
I'd be happy to trade places with you.
You boys are both just full of lives.
The two men moved on to the scaffold, then both were positioned on the trapdoors under the noose. The clergyman, who'd been standing silently in one corner of the gallows, moved over to them.
Lou Clayton and Harry Foster, since you both are soon to pass into an endless and unchangeable state, and your future happiness or misery depends upon the few moments which are left to you here, I require you strictly to examine yourselves and your estate, both toward God and toward man. And let no worldly consideration hinder you from making a true and full confession of your sins and giving all the satisfaction in your power to everyone whom you have wronged or injured, that you may find mercy at your heavenly Father's hand and not be condemned in the dreadful day of judgment.
How am I supposed to do that? Hell, parson, folks I've wronged is spread out all over the place.
Make contrition in your soul. And as was the soul of the good thief saved by our Lord, so too can your soul be saved.
It's working out real good, then. I've done near about every sin can be done. You're telling me all I gotta do now is say I'm sorry, and I won't be going to hell?
That is exactly what I'm saying. I beg of you, sir, repent. Repent now before it is too late.
I don't repent of nothing.
I do, parson. I repent of everything. I'm just real sorry for all the things I've done.
Then you, sir, like the good thief, are saved.
When I get to heaven, I'm gonna tell Emmett that I'm just real sorry we killed him.
And when I get to hell, I'm gonna kick the devil right in the ass and take the place over.
All right, parson. Step aside, please.
The sheriff slipped masks over the heads of each of the prisoners, then stepped to the edge of the gallows.
Now.
And the hangman pulled the lever. The trapdoors opened with a bang, and the two men fell through them, waist deep into the opening. Both of them became perfectly still. As they rode to meet the train, Billy had something on his mind.
Pa, watching that hanging, I didn't like it.
I didn't figure you would.
Why did you say it was a lesson?
For two reasons. One reason is, there is a very real possibility that, given the business we're about to go into, that one or both of us could wind up in the same place. I thought you might need to know that.
Well, what was the other reason?
To show you how awful it is, so that we're careful enough to keep either of us from winding up where those fellas were.
Well, if you wanted to get my attention, you sure as hell did, because I really don't want to wind up being hung. I think if it came right down to it, I'd rather be shot.
Getting shot isn't all that good either.
Well, I'll tell you what really got my attention. That's the way that fella Lou acted.
He was a feisty bastard, wasn't he? All full of piss and vinegar.
Yeah. You reckon he really done it?
What, kick the devil in the ass and take over? I wouldn't put it past him to try, but I doubt it. But hold up the stagecoach and shoot the guard? I reckon so, seeing as the other fella much as admitted it just before the hanging took place.
Pa, do you remember what Frank said when he spoke over Ma's grave? I mean about her not having to learn how to be an angel and all that?
Of course I remember. I was real proud of your brother that day. I think the words he spoke were just fine.
Well, I think they were too, Pa. His talk about Ma being an angel and all. Do you reckon she is in heaven?
Yes, as sure as a gun is iron, she's in heaven.
They spent that night down in an arroyo.
Why are we setting out our sleeping rolls down here? There ain't no breeze down here. Seems to me it would be a lot cooler up top.
You want to eat your food raw?
No.
Do you have any idea how far away you can see a campfire at night?
No, I don't know. I never really given it any thought.
If you're down on the ground, you can see it for 3 or 4 miles. If you're up on a high enough hill so the world doesn't curve away from you, you could see a campfire from 15 to 20 miles away. But down in the arroyo, can't nobody see it.
Who thinks about things like that?
I do. And you're going to have to start thinking about it. Billy, I may not always be here, but believe me when I say that if you want to stay out of jail, better yet, if you want to stay alive, You absolutely must start thinking about things like that.
I will, Pa. I will.
As Jesse and Billy stretched out that night, Jesse looked over at the low-burning fire and let his thoughts drift back more than 30 years ago. That was when he held up his first train. Near Adair, Iowa, July 21st, 1873.
$100,000 in gold. That's what this train is carrying.
If we wrecked the train, someone could be hurt. Someone could even be killed.
You think the train would just stop if we held up our hand?
No. But if someone gets killed, wouldn't your conscience bother you?
Whatever conscience I had, I left back in the war.
Conscience is but a word that cowards use, devised at first to keep the strong in awe.
That don't make no sense at all.
It's probably from one of those books Frank's always reading.
You're right, Dingus. It's from King Richard III, Shakespeare.
The third? You mean there was three kings named Richard?
There were.
How did they tell them apart?
Get ready. Here comes a train.
$100,000. Woo-wee! I didn't know there was that much money in the whole world.
Earlier, the men had loosened a length of the rail that was just beyond a blind curve, choosing a location so that by the time the engineer saw it, he wouldn't be able to stop. Just as the train came around the curve, they pulled on the rope that was tied to the track. The locomotive hit the dislodged rail and turned over. With guns drawn, Jesse and the others ran toward the train. The first thing they saw was the engineer. He'd been thrown from the cab when the engine overturned. They didn't have to examine his mutilated body too closely to see he was dead. The tender, baggage car, and express car also left the track, though the express car had not overturned. The express agent opened the door to see what had happened.
Throw down that money shipment.
Did you men do this?
The $100,000. Throw it down now if you want to live.
Mister, you've made a big mistake. We aren't carrying that money shipment. They delayed it. It's going on another train.
I'm coming onto the car to have a look for myself, and if I find you're lying, I'm gonna kill you.
Come on, look for yourself. I'm not lying. I swear to you, I'm not lying.
Open the safe.
With shaking hands, the agent opened the safe and stepped back. Inside, there was a canvas bag marked Bank of Dubuque.
What is this?
It's $2,000. That's all the money we're carrying.
Damn. All this for $2,000?
Maybe we can get a donation from some of the passengers.
A trapped gas bubble in one of the logs popped, sending up a shower of sparks and jerking Jesse back from his thoughts. Tomorrow, he and Billy would hold up a train. He was leading his son into a life of crime. No, that wasn't right. Billy had already taken up a life of crime. Jesse was just showing him how to survive. The sign painted on the side of the water tank read, Tank Number 27, Texas and Pacific Railroad. Jesse and Billy waited now behind some scrub brush that grew just high enough to keep them out of sight from the approaching train.
Hey, Paul, what are we going to do with all that money?
Boy, haven't you ever heard the term, don't count your chickens before they hatch?
Well, yeah, I've heard it.
And don't spend the money before we've got it in our pocket.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I guess I was just getting excited is all.
Don't get excited. Don't get scared. Just stay calm. That way you won't make mistakes.
Pa, how do you know about all this anyhow?
There's the train. All right, get ready. Billy?
Yeah, Pa?
Remember when I told you that anytime you pull your gun, you must be ready to kill if you have to?
I remember.
The other side of that is, don't shoot anyone unless you absolutely have to.
All right.
Wait until the fireman swings the spout over.
Damn, Hank, this tank is as dry as a bone. Whatever steam we got in the pipes is all that's left. Don't think we could have gone another mile.
The fireman pulled the spout down from the tower. A moment later, there was the loud rush of water pouring into the tank.
Now!
Jesse and Billy closed the distance between them and the train. Billy climbed up onto the locomotive.
Mr. Engineer, I would like for you to step down onto the ground, if you would please.
What? You can't be up here. Where did you come from? Get back down.
Oh, my pa and I are the ones giving the orders now. Just do as we say.
No, don't shoot. I'm getting down.
Hank, what are you doing out of the cab?
Stop the water.
What? I can't do that. The tank is nigh empty.
I said stop the water. Return the spout to the tank. Now climb down into the cab and extinguish your fire. Then let off all the steam.
Well, mister, if I do that, it'll take near an hour to get the steam back up. We'll have to clear the track before then, because there'll be another train coming along.
You'll just have to signal the train to wait until you can get yourself going again. Now do what I tell you.
Yes, sir.
The fireman climbed back down into the cab, then opened the steam pressure relief valve. Steam began gushing from the drive cylinders on both sides of the engine.
There. The pressure's at zero.
All right, now put out the fire.
Well, how am I going to do that?
If it was me putting out that fire, I'd be using that fire extinguisher. Now climb down to join your friend on the ground.
Paul, why'd you vent the steam?
I had no choice. This feller made me do it. Not only that, he made me put out the fire.
Good Lord, man. We have to reach the double track in San Martin in 45 minutes, or we'll be head-to-head with the eastbound.
Well, there weren't nothing I could do, Hank.
What's all this about?
Isn't it obvious? We're robbing the train.
People don't rob trains anymore.
Really? Well, I guess nobody ever told me that. Now come with me back to the express car. Knock on the door and tell the express man to open up.
Earl Ray, this is Hank. Open the door.
What do you need, Hank?
Hello, Earl Ray.
Who are you? What's going on?
What's going on is this is a train robbery.
Are you serious? Who robs trains anymore?
Tell him, Hank. Who robs trains anymore?
Apparently this feller does.
Now, Earl Ray, this is what I'd like for you to do. I want you to drop down the money shipment.
What makes you think we're carrying any money?
How else do banks pay off checks other than by money exchange? Every train carries a money shipment now, and I know that you are carrying at least $5,000 to the San Francisco Bank and Savings to cover the check written by my friend Emerson Williams. Now toss it down here like I ask.
I can't do that.
If you don't toss it down, I'm going to kill Hank. And if that doesn't get you to toss it down, then I'll kill Paul. And if you still won't toss it down, then I'll kill you. And just go find another train to rob where the express agent has more sense than you do.
For God's sakes, Earl Ray, give him the money. It's not like it's your money.
Hank does have a point, Earl Ray. It isn't your money. Now toss it down to the boy.
All right. I'll toss it down.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
It's got a lock.
Drop it onto the ground. Make sure there's money inside.
Look at this.
All right, Paul. You can start the water going again. Then get your fire going and the steam pressure built back up. I expect your passengers are anxious to get where they're going.
Yes, sir.
What's going on here? What was that shot?
Jesse fired toward him, the bullet hitting the assist rail just above the conductor's hand. The expression on his face reflected his panic, and he disappeared quickly back into the car.
I'll tell you what, Earl Ray. Maybe you better go back there and keep everyone in the train calm while Hank and Paul are getting the pressure built back up. Someone else is liable to get curious, and if I can't scare him back the way I did the conductor, then I'll have to kill him. And I know that neither one of us wants that. Now do it.
I'm going.
Jesse and Billy waited until the fireman was once again filling the tank with water. Then they ran away from the track, disappearing quickly into the line of trees so they couldn't be seen by anyone on the train.
Let's put some distance between us and the track.
How much did we get, Paul?
$5,715.
Oh, that's quite a haul.
It's more than we could get from a grocery store.
Yeah, I guess it is.
Don't feel bad about it. I've pulled jobs that brought in less money.
I knew it. I knew you had done this before. How? Hey, what are we going to do next?
What about a bank?
Do you have one picked out already?
Yes, in Culpeper.
Culpeper?
It's a small town north of here. It isn't served by the railroad.
Well, if it's a small bank, there won't be that much money in it, will there?
More than you think. Culpeper is a coal mining town, so the mine will keep a reserve of money on hand. And because it's a small town and a small bank, the security won't be that high. That means the risk will be less.
All right. That sounds good to me. Let's do it. What do we do first?
First thing we do is scout out the bank and the town.
Paul, what about this money?
What about it?
Well, I mean, what are we going to do with it? We just can't carry it around with us, can we?
We'll put it in our saddlebags. Have you ever heard of anyone robbing a saddlebag?
No, I don't guess I have.
We'll keep it in our saddlebags and just act normal. It'll be safe there.
But can we spend any of it?
Spend it on what?
Well, you said we were going to the town to scout it out, didn't you?
Yes.
Well, won't there be a saloon there?
I'm sure there will be.
And if there's a saloon there, there'll also be, you know.
Yeah, I know. Billy, I've known men to get drunk and start trying to impress some doxy. Can I trust you not to do that?
Well, I'll be careful, Pa, I promise. How much money can I spend?
We'll each have $20 in our pocket when we go in.
$20, is that all? That's not very much. I mean, I'm considering all we have.
Billy, that's more than a week's pay for most men. Anything more than $20 is going to get some unwanted attention. By the time we get to town, word will already be there that two men robbed the train, and I'm pretty sure there will be a fairly good description of us.
Yeah, I see what you mean, huh? I guess I got a lot to learn, haven't I?
You're coming along.
Culpeper, Texas. Jesse and Billy dismounted in front of the livery and were met by a thin, white-haired man with a prominent Adam's apple.
Wanting to put your horses up, are you?
Yes, probably just for the night. Unsaddle them, but just leave the saddles in the stall with them.
It'll be a dollar for the two of them. Yeah, pay no attention to that. That's the girls over at the Wet Mouse Saloon.
Well, I guess we'll have to look into that.
After concluding their business at the livery stable, Jesse and Billy walked on over to the Wet Mouse Saloon. It was supper time, which was peak business time.
Two beers?
The long ride had made the men thirsty. They drank the first one down without taking away the mug. Then they wiped the foam away from their lips and slid the empty mugs back toward the barkeep.
That one was for thirst. This will be for taste. Do it again.
Sure thing, boys.
Well, hello there. What a handsome devil you are. I just bet you've broken many a poor girl's heart.
Well, I bet them around a few times. Don't know as I ever broke any.
Well, you aren't going to bend Dolly's heart, are you?
Dolly? That would be your name?
You guessed it, cowboy. What's your name?
Joe. My name is Joe. Barkeep, it looks to me like Dolly here needs a drink.
Coming right up.
Oh, hello. My name's Sheila.
Hi, Sheila. My name is Tom.
I like you, Tom.
I don't have that effect on everyone, and I'm a little old for you, aren't I?
No, not at all. I like mature men. Why, you're much more handsome than your little brother here.
How do you know he's my brother?
Because you two look exactly alike.
If we look alike, how can I be a lot more handsome?
Well, let's just say that when your brother gets to be your age, he'll be more handsome, too.
How about you give Miss Sheila here whatever it is she likes to drink? And tell me where it might be a good place to eat around here.
I'd recommend Dewey Gimlin's place right next door.
Joe, what do you say we go have some supper? I could eat a horse.
Oh, don't say that around Dewey. You never know but what he might take you up on it.
Will you be here when I come back?
Honey, I'll be here waiting for you just anytime you're ready.
On second thought, Pa, Tom, why don't you go on over there without me?
I thought you were so all fired ready to have supper.
Yeah, well, I got something else on my mind right now.
All right. I guess I can eat by myself.
Oh, you don't have to eat by yourself, Tom. I was about to go over to Gimlin's for supper my own self, and I'd be glad to go with you. That is, unless you don't want company.
Well, now, how can I turn down an offer like that? I'll even buy your supper if you will allow me.
Well, that's just real sweet of you, Tom. Now you see why I prefer more mature men.
So, what do we do now?
Oh, I'm sure something will come up.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. See you later, Tom.
Sheila, I believe you said something about joining me for supper.
I did indeed.
The china, silver, and crystal gleamed softly. Gimlin's restaurant was an oasis of light in the darkness that had descended over the little town.
What do people do for a living around here, Sheila? When I rode in, I didn't see any cattle or anything under cultivation.
You didn't see it, because there isn't any.
Why is that?
Marcus Daniel Culpepper.
Culpepper? You mean like the name of the town?
Well, this town wasn't always called Culpepper. When I was growing up, it was called Red Bluff. Isn't that a pretty name?
Why Red Bluff? I didn't see anything that looks like a Red Bluff.
Well, you wouldn't. Culpepper took that down long ago with his coal mining. After he got control of everything, including the mayor and the city council, he decided to change the name of the town to Culpepper.
You sound like you don't like this man, Culpepper.
Well, how can I like him? His coal mine has poisoned the stream, so there's no water for the livestock, and the ranchers can't make a living. Well, I know this because I grew up on Trailback Ranch.
So your father is a rancher?
He was a rancher, and so was my grandfather before him. When Culpepper took over Trailback, he got a ranch that had been thriving since Texas was part of Mexico.
I don't understand. If the ranch was doing that well, why did your father sell out to Culpepper?
My father didn't sell Trailback. He had it taken from him.
How was that?
Culpepper got Trailback the same way he got all the other ranches and farms. He started a bank and gave crop and stock loans to the farmers and ranchers, just as they had taken out every year from other banks. Only they were so proud that Red Bluff had a bank, they wanted to keep the business in their hometown. What they didn't realize is that the coal mine was going to kill all the farming and ranching. And when the notes came due, Culpepper foreclosed on them. After my father lost his ranch, he was a broken man. And I... well, we had no way of making a living, so I took this job. But my father couldn't face what had happened to us, and he put a gun to his head, and he...
You don't have to go on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to be pleasant company for you while you ate.
While we eat. So, Culpepper owns the bank, does he?
Yes. Well, yes, there was an investigation a while back. Something about how he was using the bank to finance improvements in the mine, making loans to the mine, then collecting on the interest. Well, it's all very confusing. But it eventually came to nothing. And as far as improvements on the mine are concerned, the miners who come into the Wet Mouse are always talking about how dangerous it is because he cuts corners on safety.
And the law does nothing about it?
Are you joking? Marcus Culpepper is the law.
Jesse and Sheila had just finished eating and were about to leave the restaurant when Billy came in.
So, how was supper?
Well now, Joe, you sure look all full of vinegar.
Do I? Well, little lady named Dolly might have something to do with that.
So it appears. I'm glad to see that you decided to take the time to eat.
Well, believe me, after what I've been through, I need to eat. Gotta get my strength back. Well, I beg your pardon, ma'am. I sure didn't mean to say anything out of line. I mean, being as you are a lady and all.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Joe. You certainly don't have to apologize to me. From what I've heard, Dolly can be a most energetic woman.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I vouch for that. Are you leaving?
Yes, I'm going to walk Sheila back. Then I'll get us a room at the hotel.
How will I know which room, or are you going to wait in the lobby?
Just ask for Tom Howard.
Once Billy found his way to the hotel room, Jesse began to lay out a plan.
If there was ever a bank that needed to be robbed, it's this one.
Well, how are we going to do it?
We're just going to go in there and ask politely that they give us the money.
We're going to ask politely.
Well, as politely as you can ask when you're holding a gun in your hand. Whoever chose the location for the bank wasn't very smart.
Why'd you say that?
Think about it, Billy. It's the last building at the edge of town. Most of the time, they are right in the middle of town.
What difference does... Oh, if it's at the edge of town, we can make our getaway easier.
You're beginning to catch on.
They got to the livery early the next morning, but the stable hand was already there to greet them.
Hey, good morning.
You're here awful early. You must have slept here.
Yes, sir. As a matter of fact, I did. One of the things Mr. Culpepper does is he lets me sleep in one of the empty stalls.
Culpepper owns this livery?
Mister, Culpepper owns everything you see in this town.
Culpepper must be quite a man.
Yes, sir, I reckon you could say that.
He led them back to the two adjacent stalls where the horses were, then reached for one of the saddles.
No need for you to do that. We can saddle them. You go on back up front in case you get another customer.
All right.
Thank you, I will.
Billy, check your saddlebag.
It's all here, Pa.
A few minutes later, they led their horses across the street and tied them off in front of Gimlin's restaurant. Then went inside for breakfast.
Morning.
Where are all your customers, Mr. Gimlin?
Well, they're all down in the mine, working.
Already? Not even 8 o'clock yet.
The first mine shift starts at 5 a.m. and goes to 5 p.m. The second shift goes from 5 p.m. to 5 a.m.
You mean they have to work all night?
Sonny, night or day, it's all the same down in the mine.
Yes, I suppose it would be. Are there many who work in the mine?
Almost everyone in town. I made fresh biscuits this morning.
Sounds good. Could we have that with bacon and eggs?
Coming up.
After breakfast, Jesse and Billy stepped out front to untie their horses.
You think the bank is open yet, Paul?
I looked at the clock inside the restaurant. It said 10 minutes until 8. I expect the bank will be open by then. What do you say we take a ride up and down the street first just to get our bearings?
All right, what are we looking for?
You take the left side. Count everybody you see carrying a gun. I'll take the right.
The two men rode slowly down the entire length of the town. Then they turned their horses and rode back.
I saw three that was wearing guns.
I only seen one on my side. Any of them look like they knew how to use them? More important, did anyone look like they would use them?
No, I don't think so. They didn't any of them look like they knew much more on which end of the gun the bullet come out.
It looked pretty clear on my side as well. All right, I expect the bank is open by now. Let's ride on down there.
The bank was a rather flimsy-looking building, thrown together from rip-sawed lumber and leaning so that it looked as if a good stiff wind would knock it over.
Yeah, we don't need to rob this bank, Pa. We can just kick it down.
Keep your attention on the job.
All right, Pa. I'm ready.
This is a holdup. You, Teller, empty out your bank drawer and put all the money in a bag. How much is there?
$1,500.
$1,500? You expect me to believe you are operating a bank on just $1,500?
Well, that's all there is. Mr. Culpepper will never let me have more than that at any given time. If I need more money, I'm supposed to call him and he'll bring me some from the mine office.
What about the safe?
You can see it standing wide open. I got all the money out a few minutes ago. That's why I knew exactly how much there was.
You expect us to believe that?
I believe it. Based on what I've heard about Culpepper, he is the kind of son of a bitch who would do something just like that.
The bank! They're robbing the bank!
Let's go.
Jesse and Billy swung into the saddle. They rode south, out of town, holding their horses at a gallop for at least 2 miles before they slowed them to a walk.
How long do you think it'll be before they come after us?
It'll take them at least 10 more minutes to get a posse put together. Maybe longer. Then they'll be coming south after us, but we won't be here. We're going to circle back around north, then be on our way.
Where are we going?
Missouri.
Missouri? I never been to Missouri. What's it like?
It's like Missouri.
The Cabin on the Brazos, March 2nd, 1942.
You didn't take long putting into action some of what you had taught Billy, did you?
What's the sense of teaching him all that if you weren't going to put it to use?
Yes, well, I guess you have a point there. It's funny.
What's funny?
I've written about this. I mean, train robberies, bank robberies, and the like. In my books and in my short stories, I've probably robbed a dozen trains, a dozen banks, and as many stagecoaches. But I've only written about it. Now I'm writing about it again, but this time I'm writing about it from the perspective of someone who has actually done it many times. It's just a rather unreal feeling, that's all. Tell me, Jesse, what is it like?
What do you mean, what's it like? Damn, Fred, haven't I been telling you what it's like?
No, not really. Oh, you've given me some very vivid detail. Detail that I hope I'm doing justice to as far as enabling my readers to visualize the scene is concerned. But I want to know what it feels like.
Yeah, all right, I guess I can see what you mean. I'll try to tell you, but I'm not sure that I can. First, you're scared.
Really? I wouldn't have thought that. I mean, you're the one holding the gun. You're the one dictating what's going to happen. Why would you be scared?
Because you don't always know what's going to happen. The disaster and that's the only way I can refer to it, the disaster at Northfield is a perfect example of you not knowing what's going to happen. I mean, who would have thought that the entire town would turn out with every kind of gun you can imagine? Pistol, rifles, and shotguns like they did.
Yes, but Northfield was an anomaly, wasn't it?
A what?
It was unusual. They didn't normally happen like that.
No, the robberies weren't normally like that. But there was always a chance that something like that would happen again. And you are always at a disadvantage when you're pulling a robbery.
Why do you say that?
If some citizen is killed, even if you don't intend to do it, you're guilty of murder. But if some citizen kills you, he's a hero.
I see what you mean.
I never let on to Frank or anyone else, and especially never let on to Billy, how I felt. But the truth was that before every job, I could feel my heart pounding a mile a minute. My mouth would get so dry I couldn't even work up a spit, and it was all I could do to keep my hands from shaking. If any of the people I was stealing from ever knew what I was really going through, it could have been all over right then.
Do you think everyone feels like that? I mean, people who are about to rob a bank or a train or something.
I really don't know. This isn't anything I ever shared with anyone. Never until this moment, that is. And I don't expect the average person would have shared it with me. There's some people, though, I knew during the war who actually enjoyed doing things like this. Hell, Anderson enjoyed killing. Why do you think they called him Bloody Bill Anderson?
Thanks. I always try and put myself into the point of view of my characters when I write a book or a short story, or even when I work on a screenplay. But most of the time, I can do that by recalling situations I've been through that are very similar. But having never committed a holdup, it has been very hard for me to do. This may give me some insight. But back to your story. You rode south out of town, but you circled back around to the north, you said?
Yes.
Were you careful to cover your tracks so that the posse couldn't follow you?
Oh, yeah, we did everything just the way I'd taught Billy to do it. In fact, he insisted on it. Though, to tell the truth, I doubt that they were able to raise much of a posse. Not the way that town was run. I mean, when you think about it, the men who weren't down in the mine were in bed asleep.
And the name of the town, you say, is Culpeper?
Yes, but it's like Wild Horse. I doubt there's anything left there now but a few tumble-down buildings and a caved-in mine shaft.
Caved-in?
They had a terrible mine cave-in back in 28 or 29. I'm not exactly sure. There were a lot of miners killed, and when they found out that Culpeper was cheating, he had only about half the supports he was supposed to have. He wound up going to jail. After that, the town just sort of dried up and went away.
I'm sorry about the miners. Mining is a dangerous job as it is, and even more so when you have some unscrupulous bastard like Culpeper. So, you went to Missouri, did you? Is that the first time you've been back since you left?
Yes.
Where did you go?
Eventually, Kansas City.
It took them 2 weeks to reach Joplin, and there they sold their horses and tack and bought new clothes. Both shaved their beards so that it was unlikely that even if the Culpeper bank teller was standing 3 feet in front of them, he'd be able to make a positive identification. From Joplin, they caught a train to Kansas City. Kansas City, Missouri, August 1904. Outside the train depot, they saw a trolley car arriving and departing.
Which one do we take?
I don't think it matters much. All we want is to get downtown. Once we're there, it won't be hard to find a hotel.
They stepped onto one of the trolleys, dropped the fare in the coin box, then took a seat halfway back in the car.
Pa, look at that. You know what that is? That's an automobile. There's another one! There's another one! Oh, damn, they're all over the place.
There's a hotel. Let's get off here.
Stepping down from the trolley, they started toward the hotel. They had to jump back quickly to avoid being hit. Looking both ways, they hurried across the street. As they approached the hotel, a doorman opened the door for them. Inside, they learned that each room of the hotel had its own bathroom, which included a flush toilet and a porcelain bathtub and hot and cold running water.
I ain't never been in any town that was this big before.
Enjoy yourself, but just be careful and hang on to your bag. Also, don't get drunk and careless.
I won't.
We'll meet here for supper tonight.
Jesse walked up to a building with a painted sign on the window that read Kansas City Star. He stood on the sidewalk in front of the building for a moment. Then he pushed the door open and stepped inside. He could hear the clacking of half a dozen typewriters, smell ink from the press room.
Yes, sir. You wish to place an ad?
Place an ad?
Do you wish to place an advertisement in our paper? A classified announcement, perhaps?
No.
By a subscription, maybe?
No, I don't want to do that either. I would like some information about someone who used to live here.
Sir, there are over 160,000 people who live in Kansas City. Surely you don't think you can just come into a newspaper office and ask about someone and expect us to tell you how to find them, do you?
Well, this person is rather well-known. That is, her husband was well-known. I know for a fact that her husband's name appeared in many newspapers throughout the state. At least it did back in the 60s and 70s.
Just a minute. Let me get Josh up here. He's been with the paper since it started, and if there is anyone who can answer your question, it would be him. He knows everything there is to know about Kansas City history. Josh, this fella has a question you might be able to answer. I need to get back to my desk. Excuse me.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you?
I'm trying to find someone that I think lives here. Her name, that is, unless she has gotten married again, is Jane. Zerelda Mims James.
Zerelda Mims James. Well, now, you would be talking about the widow, Jesse James, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, now, Jesse James was quite a well-known figure in Missouri. I guess he's one of the best-known Missourians of the last 50 years.
I'm looking for his wife. Does she live here?
Well, sir, she did live here. That is, until she died.
She died? When did she die?
2 years ago.
How did she die? I mean, she wasn't all that old. She would only have been 55 then.
You must have known her fairly well. You look very familiar to me. Have we ever met before?
No. That is, I don't think we have met. This is my first time in Missouri, and I don't know Mrs. James either. But I've heard about her, and I just wanted to meet her to ask her some questions about her famous husband.
You're a writer. Wanting to write a story about her, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I can tell you right now, it wouldn't have done you any good if you had met her. There was just a whole lot of people who wanted to write her story, and they kept pestering her. Some even offered her a lot of money if she would give them her story, but she wouldn't do it.
Well, I can see how she might not want to do that. I'm sure she was well enough fixed that the money didn't really mean anything to her.
Well, fixed? Are you kidding? You really didn't know her, did you? From the time Jesse James was killed, she became destitute. Nobody would hire her because of who she was, and she wound up moving in with her sister because she couldn't support herself and her kids. You ask how she died? I'll tell you how she died. She died of a broken heart and humiliation. That's how she died.
Do you have any idea where she is buried?
Yeah, I know exactly where she's buried. She's at Mount Olivet Cemetery in Kearney. Yeah, Kearney's about...
I know where Kearney is, thank you.
How is it that you know where Kearney is? I thought you said you'd never been in Missouri before.
When I got interested in this, I read about Kearney and I looked it up on the map.
Yes, I can see how you might have done that. Are you going to visit the grave?
I thought I might.
Well, lots of people do. Jesse James was sort of a folk hero to people around here. All over Missouri, I suppose.
How did you feel about him?
I don't know as I can say. He was an outlaw, that's for sure. But the war between the states and the next 20 years or so were tumultuous times. I don't think you can judge anyone unless you walk in his shoes for a while.
Well, I thank you, sir, for the information you've given me.
Well, my pleasure.
Billy caught up to Jesse at the hotel.
Pa, I've been walking around this place all day. This is the biggest town I have ever been in my whole life.
It has over 160,000 people.
You know the damnedest things.
Let's take a ride tomorrow. There's a little town just north of here that I want to visit.
Are we going to scout out another job?
Not in Kearney.
Well, how are we going to get there?
Like you said, Kansas City is a big place. We'll find a livery and rent a couple of horses.
Hey, Pa, I got a better idea.
We're going to Kearney.
Well, I mean, a better idea than renting horses.
I don't want to go by stagecoach or train. I want some way of getting around while we're there, so we're going to have horses.
Yeah, that's not the only way of getting around.
You have another idea in mind?
Yeah. You remember I told you I was walking all around the town today?
Yes.
Well, here's the thing, Pa. You saw it when we was in the trolley car come to the hotel. This town is just
full of automobiles. While there's not as many automobiles as there is horse and wagons, you should see them.
I did see them. Like you said, you can't walk around in this town without seeing them.
Well, what I'd like to do is go one of them places where people buy automobiles and look at one of them up real close.
Why do you want to see one real close?
Why, if we're going to buy one, don't you think we ought to look at it real close?
Buy one? Who said we're going to buy one?
Why not, Pa? Horses is on their way out. Well, I bet you there will come a time when the only place you can see a horse is in a zoo somewhere.
If that time ever comes, I don't want to be here.
Let's buy an automobile, Pa. It's not like we can't afford one.
What in the world has put an idea like this in your craw?
This is the 20th century, Pa. I think automobiles are the thing of the future.
All right. We may as well go have a look.
Yeah, I knew you'd come around.
If we're going to get one, I say we get this red one.
Why this one, Pa? That yellow one over there looks a bit more snazzy.
Because this red one here has a top, in case it rains. And it's got enough room for us to carry our things. Snazzy.
Your father's made a wise choice, young man. This is the Oldsmobile Brougham. It not only has a roof, as you can see, but it also has these isinglass curtains that you can roll down. This will keep you perfectly dry, even in the hardest downpour. And the engine develops 10 horsepower.
Wait a minute. Are you telling me that this engine here would be the same thing as hooking up 10 horses to this carriage?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be like that at all.
I didn't think so.
Even with 10 horses, the fastest you could go would be about 20 miles an hour, and that would only be for a short distance. In this automobile, you can go 40 miles an hour for as long as you have road to drive on and gasoline to operate your engine. When we say 10 horsepower, we're talking about how strong the engine is. If you hook 10 horses up to a dead weight and pulled it, you could pull that same weight with this machine.
How much is it?
$650.
Oh, I don't know. That's a lot of money.
But Pa, if it will go that fast, think of it. It will outrun the fastest horse. It will, won't it, mister?
Oh, indeed it will.
There's one problem. We don't either one of us know how to operate this machine.
Oh, that's no problem at all, sir. Mr. Stallings, who is on our staff, will teach you how to become an excellent motorist.
An excellent what?
Motorist. That's what you call the operator of an automobile.
See, Paul, that's not a problem. You and I will be motorists in no time.
All right.
Less than an hour later, with the canvas top down and the engine humming, they had traveled a good distance from Kansas City.
24 miles in only 45 minutes. You see that sign for Kearney? Ha! You want to know how long it would have taken us to get here if we had rented horses like you wanted to?
It would have taken us a little longer.
A little longer? It would have taken us at least 3 hours. 3 hours, and we got here in 45 minutes. Ha! Buying this car was the best idea you ever had.
It was a good one, all right. The drive over here made me thirsty. Why don't we stop in front of that store up ahead and get us a soda pop?
All right.
Once inside the small grocery store, Jesse lifted the lid of a red box and, sticking his hand down into the ice water, pulled out a Dr. Pepper. Billy got a Coca-Cola.
That's a fine-looking machine you folks drove up in.
Thanks. I'm looking for the cemetery. Where is it from here?
Go north about 7 blocks until you get 6th Street, then turn left. It's right there on 6th, between Jefferson and the railroad tracks. Can't miss it.
Thank you.
We got us someone real famous buried here, you know.
Really? And who would that be?
Why, Jesse James himself is buried here. Yes, sir. After Jesse's wife died, well, they dug him up from where he was buried, and they moved him here to lie alongside her. I reckon you heard of Jesse James.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Jesse was from around here, you know.
Was he?
Yes, sir, he was. Me and him was just real good friends. I don't like to tell folks this. I mean, it was a long time ago, but they still might not understand and hold it against me. You see, the truth is that me and Jesse rode together. That is, until my wife made me quit. You should have seen Jesse's face when I told him I was going to quit. He was awful put out with me when I told him I wasn't going to ride with him no more, and he just begged me to stay with him. I hated to let him down like that. I mean, what with him depending on me as much as he did and all. But I reckon if a man's wife has strong feelings about it, then you pert and I have to do whatever it is she's wanting to do. Don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure Jesse got over it. And I can understand why you don't like to talk about it.
No, sir, I don't like to talk about it all that much. Truth to tell, I hardly ever mention it at all that I was pert-nigh Jesse's right-hand man.
I thought his brother Frank was his right-hand man.
Oh, no, sir. Now, that there's another thing don't most folks know. But the truth is that Frank, well, he's sort of a weak sister. I mean, he want nothing without Jesse. You can see that by what he done after Jesse got himself killed. Nothing. That's what he done.
Being as you were such a friend of Jesse James, I guess you took it really hard when he was killed.
Yes, sir, I did indeed. And that's another thing. I wish now that I had told him not to trust that Bob Ford fella. I had a feeling about him. He never did seem quite right by me. You know how it is when you have these feelings about people? Like, sometimes you can just know when a fella ain't telling you the truth.
Yes, I know.
Enjoy your stay in our little town.